Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writers Book Club.
This podcast is brought to you by Camille DeMaio. Camille is the author of best-selling novel The Memory of Us. Set in World War II England, The Memory of Us follows the story of Julianne, a Protestant socialite, and Kyle, a Catholic seminarian, and the love that grows among prejudice, family tradition, and culture. But when a wartime tragedy creates a devastating rift between them, Julianne is forced to make choices about who she loves and who she'll become. Named a must-read by Redbook Magazine, Coastal Living, BuzzFeed, Pop Sugar, and many more, don't miss The Memory of Us, available on Amazon.
Welcome to Blondie and the Brit. This week, we are excited to welcome Barbara Taylor Sissel. She writes issue-oriented, upmarket women's fiction that is threaded with elements of suspense and defined by its particular emphasis on crime affecting the family. She is the author of 6 novels, Crooked Little Lies, Safekeeping, Evidence of Life, The Volunteer, The Ninth Step, and The Last Innocent Hour. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you all the way from Texas. So give us some framework. You were born in Hawaii and now you live in Texas, and you were talking a little bit before the show about some of that journey, but I'd love to know what that journey was like for you as a writer to where you are now.
I think as a writer, I have found some really rich ground to draw from, having lived in several different parts of the United States, and since I've come to Texas, having lived in several different parts of Texas. Just the number of different people I've met. Texas is kind of a melting ground for a lot of people. I can remember when I initially moved to Houston, where I lived for a number of years. People in Houston resented the fact that our housing market was so dynamic, and we had people coming from all over the United States, and the city of Houston really grew to be quite a melting pot of just all kinds of people, and some people didn't like that, but I really enjoyed meeting people with all of the various backgrounds. I mean, I'm just a terrible eavesdropper, listening to other people's conversations and picking up tidbits here and there. That can only contribute to character, right? I mean, I think I still draw on a lot of that, meeting all those different kinds of people and just listening in, you know, in restaurants and so forth, to people talking to each other.
Oh, that's good. I like that little sneaking, studying people without them knowing. That's good.
And I think that's totally a writer's thing. We're kind of more sensitive. And so we're always kind of taken in our environment. We're always so aware, you know. And I think that's what that helps with our characters, right?
Yeah.
So actually, this actually leads very nicely into the next question, which is, you once lived in the grounds of a prison. So tell us about that experience and how that influenced your writing.
Incredible. And, you know, when I always knew I wanted to write from the time I was a little girl, simply because of my love of reading. If I wanted to give that back, I wanted to give to other people the same joy that I found in books. So I always knew I wanted to do it, but I never really understood what direction I would go in. I actually thought I would write historical fiction until the day I sat down and wrote the first page of the first novel I ever wrote, when I drew on my experience living on the grounds of that first offender prison in Kentucky.
Wow.
And I didn't realize what an impression it had made on me until a few years later, when I did sit down to write, and what came out was a crime that was committed and the effect it had on this family. And I think it was because living there, we interacted with the inmates. They took care of everything. They did all of the yard work around our homes. They did all of the maintenance on our cars. And in the course of that, you found that you were talking to these inmates. And so you understood why the crime they committed, their story about why it happened, what they hoped to do about it and about themselves. And then there were days when their families would come, their parents, their siblings. We interacted with those people too. And some of the stories that I heard were just heartbreaking. And some were hopeful. Some were very hopeful. And there were miracles that happened. It was really an incredible experience.
Sounds wow. like it. It sounds like a very rich experience. A lot of things that, you know, most people don't really get to experience, you know, to talk to inmates on that level where they get to trust you and know you in a different way than being incarcerated or something where they're against the guards or whatever.
Absolutely.
So,
interesting. Right. There were not cells. Because it was a first offender prison in Kentucky at that time, they were attempting to lower their recidivism rate. And so they created these forestry camps where they went out into the Daniel Boone National Forest and they would clear an area of it's all very densely wooded. They would clear areas and they would put up what they called camps. And this particular facility had a number of trailers, basically, single wide and double wide trailers, and the buildings that were there were more like dormitories. They were locked, but the guys, the inmates, stayed in rooms. They weren't cells. They didn't have bars. And the whole thing was run a lot on one-on-one counseling and all kinds of activities. The inmates had jobs, and a lot of it was that there was really nowhere to run. I mean, if they tried to escape,
be lost in the woods. Yeah.
All kinds of wild animals and all kinds of, yeah, I mean, there were just these sheer drop-offs because you're in the mountains.
Oh, gosh.
It was just like there was nowhere to go. And actually, over the time that my family was there, Kentucky did lower the recidivism rate compared to other states and compared to their own performance in years before they had those forestry camps.
Wow, good idea.
So the system worked. Both of my children, their first babysitter was an inmate.
Wow.
Who was a really great guy. He had gotten into trouble as a very young man. He had a wonderful family, very supportive. And once he got out, he turned his life around. We had Christmas cards from him for several years after he was released. And as far as I know, he never got into trouble again. But people would just look at me so funny when I would say, well, my children's first babysitter was prison inmate who was actually in for robbery.
Not for robbery.
But you had to be there. You had to know these guys and their situations. And it was very unique. And to this day, I still draw on that experience because when I did sit down to write, that's what I wrote about. That's what came out ultimately. Continues. It continues.
And are all of your books along those same sort of lines? Are they all about that sort of experience?
They're all centered on a crime and how the families on either side of that crime are affected, the families of the victims as well as the families of the perpetrators. So, yes, all of the books are issue-driven in that way, that they're sort of like if you think along the lines of Lifetime Television for Women meets L.A. Law, some of those episodes of L.A. Law, that long-running television show. It's like that.
Interesting
wow.
mixture.
You know, the morality that's involved and the level of trust that's involved and forgiveness is a big key. Because I saw a lot of that when I was at the facility in talking to the inmates, in talking to their families. Forgiveness was something that figured a lot in our conversations. It would be a terrible concern to the inmate. I've done this thing. How am I ever going to get forgiveness for it? You know, addiction comes in there too, because a lot of the times the crime was committed under the influence of something. And so they would find themselves in a 12-step program, and you come up against the ninth step where you have to seek forgiveness from the people you've wronged, but only if you're not going to do further harm. That was always on their minds. If I open this old wound, if I go back to that place, if I make these people remember, is that going to cause more damage? Am I better off? You know, who do I want the forgiveness for? Do I want it for them? Do I want it for myself? I mean, all these issues come into play in my stories because of my experience with that.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I love that. So you actually have been, you have a new book published with Lake Union Publishing, and it's called Fault Lines. Tell us a little bit about the premise of that story and what it's about.
Well, it opens with the nightmare phone call that all of us parents dread getting in the middle of the night, a police officer calling from the scene of a car accident telling us that one of our children has been terribly injured. So two sisters are left rushing to the same hospital where their two sons, who are cousins as close as brothers, are fighting for their lives. And what comes into play is the question of who was driving, who's at fault. And these two sisters are going to confront this question, and there's going to be quite a lot of blame when the driver is identified. One sister to another, that bond is going to be shattered. A secret is exposed, and these two sisters are going to confront something from their past that they're going to have to deal with, and the whole question of whether or not this bond can be healed, whether or not there can be forgiveness, is the thing that's going to be called into question.
Wow, that's amazing. So,
deep, deep. That sounds really good.
It sounds like, and you know what I love about what you're saying is, oh, these are all things that we don't as a society really ever think about. We know these things go on unless we actually go through the experience. So I'd imagine that people that have been through this experience would really get a lot out of your work.
Well, I hope so. And I do hear from people from time to time who have faced the different issues that I do go into in my books. And I guess I'm kind of odd, because I always ask these really horrendous questions of myself. And I remember back before I started Fault Lines, when I was kicking the idea around in my head and I had no idea where it ever came from. But I remember driving around with my sister, and we're close and always have, but we both know that bond, something that would probably survive almost anything. And she's 4.5 years older than me, but our children are of a similar enough age that this particular situation could have occurred. And I looked at her and I said, what would we have done?
Oh, wow.
If one of our children driving the other one around, and there was an accident caused by the one that was driving and the other one was terribly hurt, how would we weather that?
Wow.
You know, and I think I'm hoping that's the thing, that it sparks a conversation about, I'm always asking that question, where can you not forgive? Do you ever reach a point where you just say, this is unforgivable, I cannot forgive, even though you know that you're only really punishing yourself? Right. Because forgiveness is really for you.
Right.
It's not really for the other person. And that's the thing that I think we need to look at, that. We need to understand that, so that there's not so much anger in the world. And I think that's the question that I come to in every one of my novels is, you know, where's that line where I simply could not, I just couldn't forgive? That same place in Fault Lines between these two sisters.
Wow, that's amazing. Tell us, are you traditionally published, or are all your books traditionally published, or are you indie published as well?
I am indie published originally. I gave up, basically. I came to a place, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. I was in the query process for Evidence of Life. I had been querying for quite some time, and I think there might have been a handful of agents who still had copies of the manuscript. But I was really to the end of any response or any other new place to go with that. And I can remember waking up one morning and thinking to myself, I don't even want to get out of bed if I have to write one more query letter. I was, you know, to that point where it was every door seemed to have closed in my face. And so I thought, well, you can either lie here and feel sorry for yourself, or you can get up and you can take matters into your own hands, find out about publishing this yourself. And at that time, Amazon had KDP, but I didn't know anything about it. I was in a wonderful critique group, and we had talked about it, but everyone had decided still that the only way to go was through the traditional route. And I just decided, no, I can't do that anymore, because I'm just not the sort of person who can quit. I'm just too stubborn, I guess. So I got up, and when I went into my office that day, I sat down and I started to teach myself all about publishing yourself. And of course, I started with Amazon. I looked at Smashwords. I looked at Barnes & Noble. I looked at everything else that was available, but I basically concentrated on Amazon, and I ended up publishing a novel that had been turned down, The Ninth Step. I went through the process and I did really well with it. I got in on the tag end of when it was really going well for KDP authors, and I was making some nice money, but I wasn't, you know, completely sold on the process. But I was teaching my critique group too, and they were all really excited about what I was doing, and I was the guinea pig out of the five of us by doing this. And so they're all looking at this. Well, one day I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about, you know, another novel to volunteer. Okay, well, I might as well do that. And I was thinking about The Last Innocent Hour. I could get the rights back. So I was in the process of doing all of that, and the phone rang, and I looked at the caller ID, and it was a 212 area code. It still didn't really register. And I got on the phone, and it was an agent, not only an agent, it was my dream agent.
Ooh.
I had just finished reading Evidence of Life, and she said, I thought about just emailing you to ask my question, but she said, I then decided, for whatever reason, that I should call you. Well, I've always thought back to that day, and I reminded her of this sense that had she not picked up the phone, had she not called, we might not ever have come to our arrangement, you know, to being partners together. But she wanted to know how open I was to making revision. And she then told me what the revisions were, and they were very light. There was not much of anything to them. I agreed to do them, but I've been asked to do that before through the email, and I almost feel like if she emailed and asked me about revisions, I might have turned her down, because I've been through that so many times and just had the door shut in my face for all of my trouble. You know, it didn't get me anywhere, and I was doing well with The Ninth Step, and I had the plans to do the volunteer and then to get my rights back for The Last Innocent Hour and go ahead and self-publish Evidence of Life. So I was doing so well with that, I might have said no to an email. But because she called, I went through the process, and she then offered representation, and I've been with her ever since. And she ultimately sold Evidence of Life and Safekeeping to Mira in a really wonderful deal. And while that relationship didn't continue, Tara Parsons, who was an editor at Mira, whom I knew from Mira, reached out to me when she went to Lake Union. She was familiar with Crooked Little Lies. And so she reached out, not to me, but to my agent, and acquired Crooked Little Lies. And of course, now I'm still there with Fault Lines. So that's how all of that worked. But it did start because of Amazon and because of KDP. I just kind of look at that whole experience as I was sort of like the mom who thinks, okay, I'm going to adopt because this pregnancy thing is not working out. And once she adopts, the pregnancy thing does work out.
Right. Yeah. That's an amazing journey. Just tell me, when she got Evidence of Life, was it in a book already or was it just a manuscript that she'd got hold of? How did you get hold of that book?
That manuscript, she had had it for 9 months.
Wow.
So I had written it off, pretty much. You know, I mean, 9 months, come on.
Yeah.
That's just absolutely unheard of. But I had an offer from her, and within 4 days of her asking me if I would do those very light edits that she wanted, another agent contacted me and has had it for over a year.
Oh, my gosh.
Who was interested. But my dream agent had contacted me, so I was definitely, if I was going to go with representation, it was going to be my dream agent, not anyone else.
So, Barbara, you have 6 books published, and you're about to publish another one. Does the creative process get easier as you go along here in tackling your challenges of story concept and design and all that stuff?
In certain ways, actually, I have noticed probably over the writing of Crooked Little Lies and Fault Lines more and more, that the process has gotten a bit easier. I think because I'm forced through having a deadline imposed, I've been forced to become more organized. I used to be total seat of the pants. I'd just get an idea and I would sit down and hack around. I can remember at one point practically writing a book totally stream of consciousness, just sitting down and every day racking up pages. It was the biggest mess to try and figure out where that story was when I went off on so many tangents. And that story eventually did end up becoming safekeeping. But boy, if you could see where that started out and where it ended up, you'd wonder, how did that happen?
Wow, that's
interesting. So it has, because now I have to, if you want to sell and you want to do it traditionally, you are going to have this deadline imposed. And I'm not the kind of person who can break a deadline. I just have this thing where I've just got to meet that. And I think one of the things that I am drawn to with writing is I'm not very competitive except with myself for some whatever reason.
That's good.
And so it challenges me on that level. Can I beat this deadline? So I do now, because of having to do a proposal, now you sell on proposal when you work for a publisher. So you have to have a synopsis. And so I'm just forced into organizing characters, plot points, the climax, the denouement, all of that. It's all got to be on the paper. And then these 3 chapters have got to be put onto the paper. And my agent has got to have this package. And she vets my work. She is excellent at helping me focus where I need to go. And she knows the market so well. And that's another thing is I think I pay more attention now to market advice even prior to writing a story. And I don't know if that's good or bad. You know, it's like, who would have done that for William Faulkner? No one's going to sit down and tell William Faulkner, hey, get this synopsis in these 3 chapters and then I'm going to sell this work. No, he wrote what he wanted to write. And so I have that war inside of me a lot of the time. And I think, you know, I just kind of like to go back to write what I want to write. But I'm off topic. But, yeah, I'm more organized.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're a lot more efficient, and the market is nothing like when Millett Faulkner was writing. You can't necessarily compare yourself to him. There's no comparison whatsoever.
No, it's sort of like comparing apples to oranges. And the reading public, they're not looking for the same sort of, or a very small segment of people still looks, an aging segment probably.
Yeah, probably.
Still looks for that sort of a book. But that's a real narrow audience, and that's not the person I'm writing to.
Yeah. Well, and you're also selling to a company, and they have their own market resources. They know what sells. So it's really different if
your agent will know what sells too. If she's worth anything at all, she's going to know. And so I pay attention to that because I want to sell. I want to write.
Yeah.
Yes. But I want to sell. I do. And one of my things that just was like waving a red flag in front of a bull to me is all the years that I had people say to me, well, you'll never make a living. You'll never make a living. Oh. Well, no, I will. I will make a living. And that's just like,
and here you are.
I would just sit and I would, even before I didn't make a living at it, I would think to myself, no, I will make a living. Watch me.
Watch me
make a living.
I like your tenacity.
So, yeah, well, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't make a living. But, you know, it does take tenacity. It takes persistence, and you have to be able to take abuse. You just have to be able to take all this naysaying and all of these people telling you these things. And it's like, hey, you know, walk a mile in my shoes. I don't want to get to the end of days and think, oh, well, I could have. Oh, well, I should have.
Right.
You know, I'll walk off the ledge first and take the chance. And I just have really spent so little time regretting that I've done what I've done.
Yeah.
Because I did walk off the ledge.
Well, it sounds like
you've really
put the time into doing, you know, the research, and you're working hard at it. And, you know, you've really put the time in. You should be reaping rewards by this point. So, and you are. So that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. What I really love are book clubs. And what I would really love to do is Skype book clubs.
Ooh, well, now you're on Skype.
You can't get out so much anymore and do that. I'm out in the sticks, and I used to love to travel. I'm just not a traveler much anymore. I'm kind of a hermit. But book clubs are wonderful, and if I could wiggle my nose and be at book clubs or Skype book clubs, I would do that.
That is cool.
Above anything else.
Well, I'm gonna tell my mom about your books and see if their book club will do it. And they Skyped me on my book, and it was really fun. I had so much fun just answering their questions and finding out what they liked about the story and what they were confused about or where they wanted to know what was going to happen next. I have a sequel, so I'll pass that along. And if anyone's out there listening that is book club oriented and thinks that her books would be a good fit, how can they get a hold of you? What's your website?
It's www.barbarataylorsissel.com. Totally available through my author page on Facebook. I'm on there every day, and I respond.
Well, good deal. We will. Your Facebook page will have a link in our show notes on the website, so you can go find that out. Now we have one more question for you. What are you working on now?
It is tentatively titled Hold Them Close, and it is a story that is going to be told through the mother of a bride and the mother of a groom in the aftermath of the police finding the dead body of a bridesmaid in the groom's apartment.
Oh,
groom is missing. So is the groom, he's a person of interest, but in the capacity of also being a victim, or is he the perpetrator?
Interesting. That sounds great.
So we pit these two mothers together who really come from very different parts of society. One is quite wealthy. Quite a bit of tension from the outset.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. I could see that in a movie, too. That would be a very intense movie.
I hope it is. I hope it is.
Let's put it out in the universe. Let's make that into a movie. Come on, people.
Come on, people.
Okay, are you ready for your lightning round?
Yes.
All right. Okay. So quick answers. Some of these might make you think you can pass and we'll come back to it, or you can call a friend. No, not really. Okay. What is your favorite band or artist?
Oh, I love Frank Sinatra.
There you go.
Lovely.
Left coast or right coast?
Left.
There you go. What is your favorite writing spot?
My office.
And maybe borders from days gone past, right?
Yeah, from days gone past.
Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Used to be a pantser, now more of a plotter.
A plotter, right. That's how I am too. We talked to a lot of authors.
I still really draw on aspects, because even though I will turn in that synopsis, I will say this. No ending of any book I have ever written has ever been what was indicated in the synopsis.
Wow. Oh, I like that.
Never.
So more things come to play as you're writing it. That is cool.
Yes.
If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
World War II.
Ooh, where would you be while we're choosing?
I want to say Europe, and I don't even know why.
Because it's more action. There's a lot more action going on.
I want to say France.
France. Ah, very interesting. Probably some movie you saw that made it look beautiful and fun. I think if you were in France during World War II, you would wish you were in 2016 in Texas, probably.
Yeah. You know what's interesting to me is the fact that you obviously love being in those places where things are happening. Like you write those kind of books where they're right in the middle of, you know, like something going on. And you obviously have got that connection, you know, with wanting to be. I'm the opposite. I want to be away from anything like that. You obviously like that.
I guess. Odd.
It's good. It's definitely good for your writing.
I know when I hear that, when I hear myself say that, I'm going to go, what are you talking about?
That's hilarious. He's got like a dual personality. One of them's adventurous and wants to be in the thick of it. And the other one wants to sit in your office with your cat and write. If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
Invisibility.
Ooh. What would you do with that?
Eavesdrop.
Yeah, as a writer, it actually would be a very good tool. Hear all the things they won't say. Yeah, hear all the things they won't say in front of you. Who inspires you? Who or what?
My kids inspire me.
That's a good one.
Most of all, I think my kids. I have learned more from my kids, and they have taught me more about how to be brave and how to know who you are and not apologize. They're very unique and they're very individual, and I'm really lucky to have them in my life. As friends, really. They're people I would know.
Sounds like you did a lot really well bringing up your kids for them to turn out to be people that you so admire.
Well, as I said, I don't know how much I did, because they seem to have just come with their own personalities, their own attributes. And I guess if I did anything, it was to say to them that they needed to be who they were.
Yeah. Yeah, to encourage that and give them a safe environment that they could grow into who they're supposed to be. So good job, you. Which book do you wish you had written?
Oh, probably Wuthering Heights. Ooh. I love that book.
Good choice.
Or something by Faulkner. Or Harif, Kent Harif. Am I saying his name right? Of the book that he wrote that was so wonderful that got me started on him. And then I read everything, that he's a wonderful writer. So, you know, you run across those books where you're just jealous.
Yeah.
Why can't I like that? Yeah. I've always had this desire to write that beautiful, erudite novel that just draws people in, that just captures their imagination. That's never going to happen. I would write Wuthering Heights or something by Faulkner. I love Faulkner.
Well, maybe that's why you admire that so much, is because it's not in your skill set necessarily. That,
like, they were so absent from their process.
Yeah.
I feel like they were so absent from their process, where we have to be so cognizant, or I feel like I am. I have to be so cognizant of my process, of my market, of my
The marketing target. Marketing element. What is your favorite writing or author moment so far?
The moment where, just like right before you called, where I wasn't even here.
I love it.
I was not in this world. I was not in my life. I was not aware that I had an obligation. Yeah, I was just gone. And so, yeah, that moment, because the writing just flows.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good when you have an appointment or something, but you know how that is. That moment. I love that moment.
I do.
More than any other. Well, it's just, you know, how can you ask for anything better than that when you write?
Yes, I agree.
And I think that sometimes writing is such a slog. It's just so hard. And I remember going to a conference once, and it was a romance author, a really famous romance author, was the keynote speaker. And she said often her writing process was so difficult, she would get up and look in the mirror to see if her head was bleeding.
Oh, my God.
She had banged it against a brick wall so hard trying to get the pages out. The whole thing about hitting a place where you don't work that hard, where it's simply the book is writing itself. Yeah. How could you not fall in love with it? Second only to the one where you hand off the manuscript.
Right.
I mean, it's only other writers who can really understand how that works. So yeah. I'm so appreciative that it was you and not someone else who would just be like, oh, she's crazy.
Well, you are crazy, but you're special kind of crazy. That's what makes you a good writer. That's good.
We all have the same disease.
Yes. That's right. Okay, last question. One thing that you wish you'd been told as a writer?
How hard it would be. How long it would take. How your heart would be broken.
Oh.
You know, and that it would be worth it.
Well, yeah, you got to add that last part or you'd be like, meh, I'll just pass.
And that it would be worth it.
Yeah.
And that you would discover so many wonderful things along the way.
Well, this has been a really fun interview. Thank you for all your great information.
Books. Oh, thank you.
It's really been great. Your books sound really interesting, very intense, very original. I'm excited to dive right into them, and I hope people call you on your book club. Just really appreciate your time, and I'm terribly sorry we interrupted such a good flow, and hopefully you'll just jump right back into it.
Thank you so much. I have enjoyed this so much. I love nothing better than to talk to anyone about writing. I love to talk about writing, and so it has been a real pleasure to be with you too this morning.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your time.
You too, Barbara. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad I did this and apologetic. Thank you. Great. Thank you so much. And you all have a wonderful day, too.
You too.
Take care.
Please join us next week where we welcome Haley from Buffer. It is an app that helps you schedule your social media posts. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.